Okay, we'll call to order the meeting of the Programming and Allocations Committee. Can we confirm that we have a chair? I have a quorum?
We have a quorum.
We do have a chair.
We do.
We have a quorum and a chair. It's always exciting. So first, we'll start with the consent calendar. Is there anyone who wants to pull anything off of the consent calendar?
Pull consent.
Okay. And do we need to do public comment on the consent calendar? I don't have any public comment cards for the consent calendar. So we have a motion by Commissioner Tissier and a second by Commissioner Baker, and we'll take that without objection. Moving on to item 3, RM2 operating program.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Cheryl Chi with the Programming and Allocation Section. I'm presenting the RM2 operating program and marketing program for your approval. The RM2 operating program this year is $41.6 million. It includes $1.8 million in new funding. The new funding is comprised of escalation adjustments that had been suspended and that staff believe we are now able to fund, and remaining programming in Express Bus North category. We're presenting of that $1.8 million, $1.3 million in projects to fund. They're in the two categories, the Express Bus North and Express Bus South. And the recipients of that funding would provide new expanded Express Bus service. And that's in Solano County and West Cat, which would serve their community to San Francisco. The remaining $500,000 in proposed new funding, we would return to the commission in the summer with recommendations on suitable projects to fund. There are three routes that are not meeting RM2 performance standards. One route we propose to not fund in fiscal year 2015-16, and that's the LAFTA, the Livermore Amador Transit Agency Rapid Service. They're currently in their grace year of funding. Staff does recommend that the RM2 funding for the Rapid be held in reserve until their comprehensive operational analysis is adopted and they approve service adjustments, which they feel will bring their service up to RM2 performance standards. Staff also proposes that the revised rapid service be in operation for a full year before the performance is reassessed for RM2 funding purposes. The other two routes that are not currently meeting performance standards is the WEDA South San Francisco service and the Dumbarton One service operated by AC Transit on behalf of the Dumbarton Consortium. We are working with both those operators on their corrective action plan, and we'll provide an update in the fall when we return with the annual performance update. And I'm happy to answer any questions, and I ask that the RM2 operating program and marketing program be forwarded to the commission for approval. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, are there any questions or comments? Yes, Commissioner Bates.
So I'm wondering, excuse me, maybe this is the wrong time, but I'm wondering about the AC Transit corridor, to San Francisco, the current bus service. I'm wondering, do we have any indications of how that's the numbers and how they're achieving their performance? Because, you know, I have become incredibly frustrated with BART after having last week getting stuck twice by BART, once going to San Francisco on Wednesday and not getting there because it broke down a 10-inch line. Another time when we were here at the MTC, I attempted to leave and found out that there was two problems with BART and unable to actually make my, make it to where I was supposed to do, and finally had to just abort to where I was going. And so I ended up getting on the bus, and I was thinking, particularly the service to San Francisco, I'm just wondering if they're achieving their numbers and if there's any opportunity to sort of increase service so that people can get away from BART. And then lastly, today coming, I took the Millbrae train from BART, and it was absolutely unbelievably packed. I mean, you couldn't get another person in the car if you wanted to. And so we're going to have to provide some other, alternative service that's reliable and can get people where they need to go.
Commissioner
Commissioner Ann Richmond with the Programming and Allocation Section. We certainly have detailed information from AC Transit and other operators on their performance on these routes, and we could provide that to you in the future. I will say that AC Transit is currently undergoing their own operational analysis and looking at whether it makes sense to expand service in certain areas, and if so, how they could go about doing that. I would also point out, as Cheryl said, that one of the services that we are proposing to increase funding for is the Westcat route, their express bus service into San Francisco, which serves some of the same type of communities that you're mentioning. And this is a pretty substantial increase for them. It would allow them to add something like 50 to 75% more service on that route.
Try to figure out, you know, alternatives for people so that they can, they don't have to rely on exclusively on BART to get from one place to the next, because it's, you know, their performance has really not been stellar for sure.
Scott.
Yes. Commissioner Sperry.
You know, Steve, I want to follow up on that. You know, I was caught in those, that same train mess coming from back from the industry. Is there any discussion by our staff looking at kind of a reliever route, so to speak, for BART, that we actually promote it as such, that we're not looking for either AC Transit or somebody else to provide that service? You know, what Tom is saying, some of those train rides, they are just miserable rides. I mean, those trains are just packed. They're leaving people at the station. And, you know, I'm talking to people on BART, and I've been using it a lot lately, is that there's people that haven't been able to sit down for 10 years. And so, you know, I think we really need to start looking at some type of reliever route system. And so could you respond to that?
Commissioner, I appreciate both the questions. Alex and I were just talking about it, and I may make you mad, but I do hope you'll let me just start by saying that I really enjoy that I've got a bunch of commissioners complaining about how crowded transit is, because that didn't used to be the way it was. I think the problem with BART is not a temporary one. I think it's going to last a while. I think it is temporary in a way, because, as you know, they're ordering an entire new fleet of cars. They've started work on a new train control system that will make the system work better, and especially in the tube, could get them 20% more capacity than they have today. And they are also investing in a major rehabilitation of their system. But what you see happening now with welds failing on track and all the rest of it is accumulated and deferred maintenance. And it's going to take them a while to catch up to that. So I would like to work with staff and come back to you and work with both BART and its complementary and parallel operators to see whether we could put something together that might be a patch in the interim until BART gets a lot of this work done and a lot of the new equipment online. And that's several years before it is all done. As you know, the commission historically has taken a bit of a skeptical stance with respect to AC Transit service over the bridge, because in large measure what it used to do was duplicate BART service where there wasn't a capacity problem. Now it's paralleling BART service where there is one. And it may be that we need to change our thinking a bit and try to put something together that would make more sense for more commuters.
Yeah. Steve, I'm disappointed you're talking about just a patch. You know, the new trains are going to have fewer seats. A lot of people are complaining on the trains that they can't stand that whole distance all the time, every day. And I really think that I hope the staff looks at a more long-term alternative route or service that can be provided for people that don't want to be standing on these trains all the time, and because the seating capacity is being reduced. It's not being increased.
Well, but I think the capacity of the trains will grow. And Commissioner, I know you and I had this conversation a couple meetings ago.
Right.
I do think BART is making a transition from being primarily a commuter rail system to being more of an urban rail system. And in an urban rail system, there's standing every day. That's what it's like. Now, BART is always going to be a bit of a hybrid because it has that long reach out into communities, especially in the East Bay. And when we get down to San Jose, It's a very big, extensive system. So I think we may have to meet halfway on that question. I don't think we're going to go back to the days when everybody had a seat on BART. That was sort of their original operating mantra, and BART's just too critical and too popular in the region now for that to be the case again. But I am mindful of the fact, and I hope you're mindful of the fact, that if we're going to try to scare up some additional service in those corridors, we got to find the money. And operating money is not lying around these places. We're going to have to raise it. But I do appreciate the concern that you're both expressing, because I think you're speaking for a lot of folks, both of you. So why don't you allow us to spend a couple of months on this and come back to you with something a little more systematic?
Can I just?
Yes, Commissioner Haggerty.
Thank you. I just wanted to comment on the operating money and even the state of good repair money for my colleagues, just to remind you all that our Measure BB not only had state of good repair money in it from Alameda County to BART, but also operation money that we will be paying to BART once a year. So, you know, as you start going with your measures, you might want to think about that too.
Commissioner Worth and then Commissioner Bates.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Steve, I want to thank you for bringing this back to our commission. I also think it might be helpful to have some direct information from BART in the next few months. I know that one of our Contra Costa directors, Joel Keller, gave an excellent presentation to the Contra Costa Mayor's Conference a few months ago, and we were able to not only hear about capital operating long-term, but focus on some of the operational issues that have come forward today. So I know we have a good working relationship with BART, and I think that would be a helpful addition to that conversation, too, because it is so critical to our communities. So many of our communities are based on their proximity to BART. BART is such an important part of people's daily lives, commuting, doing whatever they do. So thank you very much.
Commissioner Bates.
Thank you very much. So I want to just continue a little bit on this discussion, because what's happening with the PDAs is we're now cramming more and more people into the BART system. You know, we're building around there. In our own community, we're going to build 1,000 more units. Well, we're not providing any car parking, really. We're unbundling it, and we're not bringing it. So we're actually people to rely on BART to get around, particularly to the east, to the West Bay. So it's really critical that we start thinking about how we can get people to have public transportation that is reliable and is available to them. So that, and I know that this is not going to be solved overnight, and I just appreciate that we're going to start to think about this, because we can't continue to put. I mean, it's really unfair to have people and build up your around the stations, and you can't get on the train because it's so goddamn crowded that you can't get on it. And the other thing that really bugs me more than anything is when I get on the train, these people want to give me a seat.
Don't complain, Tom.
I've never gotten any offers.
Thank you. And that's a step forward, because we had some reporting around Muni about people not giving up their seats to a lot of people that they should have done to. So if people are more aware, that's a good thing. So I'll not seeing anyone else wanting to talk, I just want to add, in terms of BART, we're playing a game with BART and other systems, but especially BART, I think a game of catch-up with a moving target. The system has fallen so far behind current needs, and we know that the system hit 400,000 riders, I think, a decade before anticipated. But as we'll recall from Plan Bay Area, where the region's projected to grow by 2 million people in the next 25 years. And so we're trying to play catch-up to get us to today's needs, but we actually need to play catch-up and then get us to needs, 10, 20, 25 years from now, or we're going to be sitting here having not just the same conversation, but talking about how we can't physically squeeze onto the train, let alone get a seat. And so I want to just note two, I think, one very pressing issue around BART and one long-term. The pressing issue is that I know BART is planning to go out with a bond next year, and I think it is absolutely imperative that BART go out with a bond that is large enough to actually take care of its capital needs. I know that there's discussion within BART and at its board of directors, and there are people who may be thinking that BART should go out with a smaller bond. And, you know, I think if you're going to go out with a bond, it's going to be a multi-billion dollar bond regardless. It needs to be big enough to take care of all the needs, because the last thing we need is to have BART coming back and saying we don't have enough money now, or we're $1 billion short to take care of our all of our track needs and other kinds of needs. So if anyone agrees with me on that, and you know members of the BART Board of Directors, we should all be encouraging them to actually do a bond that is as big as they need and not to skimp on the size of the bond. And then the longer-term issue is, you know, I know we're just starting some conversations around the need for a second Transbay tube, not just for BART, but to connect the Capital Corridor to Caltrain and ultimately to get high-speed rail through the East Span up to Sacramento. And I know some people have said, let's talk about that later. Obviously, it's a long-term project and a very expensive project, but now is the time to be starting to have those conversations so that, again, 10, 20 years, we're not sitting here saying, wow, there's no more room in the Transbay tube, and it's going to take us another 20 years to build a second tube. So it's all about that long-term thinking. So are there any other comments or questions? I don't have any public comment cards for item 3A. Is there any public comment? Seeing none, can I have a motion to move item 3A to the full commission?
So
moved. Okay. Motion by Commissioner Wirth, second by Commissioner Tissier. And can we take that without objection? That will be the order. Item number four is we have staff presentation.
I'm not on. Okay. MTC adopted the Cycle 1 regional ATP in September of 2014 and amended the project list last month. This month, staff recommends amending the Cycle 1 regional ATP again to remove one project from the funded list, add projects to the funded list from the contingency list, and add two projects to the contingency list. As we discussed earlier at the administration committee, staff recommends transitioning the bike share program to a private operator with minimal further public investment. Public funds program for the bike share program would return to MTC for reprogramming. A summary of these funds are included in the memo. At this time, staff recommends reprogramming the $7.7 million in ATP funds due to timely use of fund requirements imposed by the state. Since the state statute requires that ATP funds be distributed on a competitive basis, the $7.7 million freed up by the Bay Area Bike Share Expansion Project would fund projects on the contingency list. These recommended projects are listed in Attachment 1 to the memo. Staff also recommends adding two new projects to the contingency list. All projects in Cycle 1 ATP must meet strict delivery deadlines and request allocation of funds from the CTC no later than March of 2016. With that, staff recommends referring Resolution 4132 to the Commission for approval, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. And for clarification, this is item 4A, because there's a 4B after this. Colleagues, are there any questions or comments on item 4A? Seeing none, I don't have any public comment cards. Is there any public comment on item 4A? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Could I have a motion to forward item 4A to the full Commission?
Moved
by Commissioner Campos, seconded by Commissioner Wirth. And can we take that without objection? That will be the order. Okay, item 4B.
Good morning. This is an update on the latest with the state cap and trade programs. Matt Maloney from MTC staff. In particular, the initial funding solicitations for two major cap-and-trade programs, Transit and Intercity Rail Capital Program and the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities Program, are drawing to a close. As I think you know, MPOs across the state, like MTC, have only a limited role with these programs. However, we are seeking to provide guidance to the state decision-makers so that the Bay Area's list of projects supports the adopted regional policy and funding commitments. This morning, we're seeking approval of regional endorsements for both of the programs that I just mentioned. And before we get to those, I just want to run through kind of a very quick refresher course on the cap and trade programs, just for context. The FY 2014-15 budget State budget for cap and trade includes $872 million. Of course, that fiscal year is drawing to a close. And I think what's really most important is that Senate Bill 862 established a long-term framework out to 2020, which describes funding categories and kind of the percentages of funds across different programming categories. The governor's current FY 2015-16 budget includes $1 billion for cap and trade, and we actually expect this number to change based on the results of the cap and trade auctions. And in fact, we expect it to increase. I'll say a little bit more about this at the close of the presentation. So just to refresh everybody's memory, this slide describes the long-term state programs broken down by the percentage of the long-range funding pot. It also gives a rough estimate of the future size of each program, which is based on an estimate of $2.5 billion a year. So I want to stress that the numbers in that column, the dollar amounts, are simply estimates based upon $2.5 billion. Of course, as I said, the governor's budget includes $1 billion now, but that's subject to change. And so just kind of going down the list in terms of the columns, 40% of cap and trade funds remain uncommitted. We still don't know exactly what kind of program categories those funds are going to go to, and these will need to be clarified further via the legislative process. In terms of high-speed rail, which is 25% of the program, this is a long-term commitment allowing for advancement of high-speed rail on multiple segments across the state. In terms of kind of a regional viewpoint on the high-speed rail money, as you know, the Caltrain Electrification 9-party MOU member agencies are currently updating the project funding plan for that project, which may include cap and trade high-speed rail money in terms of that. The low-carbon transit operations program, going down the list, 5% of the total pot. This is a formula-based program for transit capital and operational improvements. $25 million was available statewide in FY 14-15. We expect that number to grow. In terms of this year, the commission has actually acted on this money already. In terms of the regional share, $6.8 million went directly to transit operators, $2.4 million to MTC for regional allocation of our population-based funds. And so this actually, back in January 2015, the commission assigned population-based funds based on the existing framework. So that leaves us with the bottom two programs, transit and intercity rail capital and affordable housing and sustainable communities, and these are the two programs that we're seeking approval about today. Transit and intercity rail capital is a statewide competitive program to fund capital and operational improvements to modernize California's transit systems and reduce emissions of GHG. The administering agency of this program is the California State Transportation Agency, or CalSTA. So they're actually responsible for the project evaluation for the development of the program of projects. They're starting out with a two-year funding cycle for this, 14-15 and 15-16. A total of about $125 million is on the table statewide. In March, we brought this program to your attention. The commission directed staff to prioritize elements of the core capacity challenge grant program for the initial funding cycle. So this reflects a continued focus on our original cap-and-trade framework, which includes a total of $875 million in future cap-and-trade funds for the core capacity program. In terms of time frame, CalSTA will publish a list of approved projects on June 30th. We had four projects submit from this region. These are up on the screen in front of you. A total of $78.7 million was submitted. Again, statewide, we have about $125 million available. These projects are actually further described in Attachment A. So this slide shows the funding amounts, estimates of GHG reduction that were made by the project sponsor, and whether the project has elements that serve a disadvantaged community as defined by Cal EPA through Cal EnviroScreen. Based on the direction to prioritize projects that support investment in core capacity, staff recommends that MTC endorse three projects. These are the ones that are shaded on the screen, totaling $67.8 million, or approximately 54% of the statewide total. So that includes SFMTA's expansion of the light rail vehicle fleet for $41 million, AC Transit's reopening and rehabilitation of Division 3 Richmond operating facility for $8 million, and VTA's BART Berryessa Station campus area project for $18 million. Moving on to affordable housing and sustainable communities, the second program, statewide competitive program, again, to provide grants and loans for affordable housing, infill, compact, transit-oriented development, and also infrastructure that connects these types of projects to our existing transit systems. Strategic Growth Council is running this program. Again, they are doing the project evaluation. They are selecting the projects. We are advising them in that capacity. $120 million is available in this program. This is only going on a one-year cycle, FY 2014-15, so we'll be getting into the second round of this pretty soon, probably this calendar year. SGC will approve awards to this program in late June. So again, MPOs have an advisory role. In February, MTC reviewed initial concept proposals for support of sustainable community strategies, and in March, SGC invited a select number of the initial applicants to submit full applications. In March, the Commission approved a set of regional principles for how MTC should evaluate these projects. So these are the seven principles on the screen. These are Commission approved. Looking at GHG reduction, looking at the disadvantaged communities criterion, but also the communities of concern, which is the regional definition, support of Plan Bay Area focused growth investment strategies, level of housing affordability, transit, funding leverage, and then OBAG policy, which really comes down to whether localities have complete streets policies and up-to-date housing elements. So this is kind of the lay of the land in terms of the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities program. We got 19 applications in the final round from this region for $98.4 million. Statewide, SGC received $255 million in applications statewide. So Bay Area applications made up 39% of the statewide total. This slide summarizes the applications. Attachment C describes the 19 projects in more detail and gives a narrative description of them. And I think there's a couple things to take away from this slide. I think first, the Bay Area did very well, has done very well in this program to date. And the projects that we're proposing are very strong across the board. I just want to remind you, there's a concept round of this program prior to the final round, where SGC worked to pare down the number of applications statewide. And even after we went through that process, we still wound up with nearly 40% of the funds in the state in the final round. I can also tell you that it stands to reason that some other parts of the state are obviously not happy about how they fared in this program. So that's just something to keep in mind in terms of looking at this. So, I mean, this is a tough exercise for staff in terms of going through and evaluating the pool of projects. It was very competitive and very solid projects. We found that all projects were supportive of Plan Bay Area. Since all either increase the number of affordable housing units in proximity to transit and or provide great investments in transit or complete streets. Just a few other elements on this table to give you a sense of how our region was meeting the overarching goals of the program. There's some numbers here about disadvantaged communities and affordable housing. 57% of the Bay Area funds were actually benefiting disadvantaged communities, 69% for affordable housing. In terms of the program statewide, there's a set-aside amount, 50% for both of those categories. So 50% of the money needs to be disadvantaged communities, 50% needs to be affordable housing. So we were really, achieving above and beyond the state set-aside goal. And then in terms of funds in the TOD category, about three-quarters of the funds were in that category. The state has a minimum of 40% of the funds in terms of the approved projects that need to go to TOD. So here's a list of the projects that we are endorsing and seeking your approval of today. 13 projects at a total of $63.4 million. This slide shows the projects by city, as well as the number of affordable housing units to be funded. So generally, staff is recommending the housing projects with the highest GHG reductions and the strongest support for the other principles that you approved. And Attachment B has more details on those. We are recommending projects in San Francisco County, Alameda County, Contra Costa, and Santa Clara counties. It's worth mentioning that Marin, Sonoma, and Napa did not have any projects in the final round. And I also want to briefly mention the funding caps, and particularly the San Francisco situation with this program. I think it's worth mentioning briefly. This program caps funding awards at $15 million per city. SGC can waive this requirement if they need to meet some of the minimum set-aside standards for affordable housing in disadvantaged communities. And this particularly affects San Francisco, which has four projects in the final round totaling $42 million, all of which performed very well against the regional principles. So how we're trying to deal with this funding cap, we're trying to acknowledge it, and we're recommending two projects in San Francisco, the Eddie and Taylor Family Housing Project and Mission Bay South Block 6 East, for a total of $17.2 million. The total exceeds the $15 million cap slightly, but we will urge SGC to consider the relative strength of these projects compared to others across the state when they make their final decision. So brief summation, again, 13 projects, $63.4 million. In total, this will construct 922 additional units of affordable housing at an average of 46% area median income. And again, wide range of supportive housing and transportation infrastructure. And transportation is also a part of these projects. Increases in pedestrian safety and encouragement of walking, bicycling, and accessibility to transit. So before you today is a recommendation of the projects in these two programs, transit and intercity rail and affordable housing and sustainable communities. Later this year, we will return with an update on cap and trade, including potential revisions to our cap and trade framework. By that time, we will have had the benefit of seeing how well the Bay Area fared in the first round of these programs, as well as having additional information regarding the cap-and-trade auctions and, therefore, the future size and scope of these programs. And just briefly on the auctions, the February auction generated $629 million in proceeds for the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund. So that was certainly a great start. The next auction is coming up soon on May 21st. There was certainly some thought that we would see a revise of the governor's budget this week, which estimates $1 billion next year. Our assumption is that number will probably increase based upon the auctions that we've seen so far and may set the tone for how much revenue we'll see in the next fiscal year. But, of course, the FY 2015-16 budget, there's a bit to work out on that still. So this is simply another way of saying stay tuned. So I'll stop there. Again, we're seeking your approval on these two programs, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Commissioner Tissier.
I'm just sort of curious, on the South San Francisco Complete Streets project, I was just sort of curious why they didn't make the cut. I mean, I know the other one is up for Tiger Grant, but I'm just sort of curious. That's kind of a low-income area over near Grand Avenue.
So there were two projects that were proposed in the South San Francisco area. Both projects were both transportation-only projects, so there was no housing components to those projects. You know, that being said, we took a look at those projects in terms of how they performed. You know, looking at those two projects in terms of GHG, on the City of South San Francisco project, which is really more of a bicycle accommodation to get to the relocated Caltrain station in South San Francisco. It scored a little lower than a lot of the other projects in terms of GHG. So that was one of the things that we looked at. On the other one, which was a Caltrain, part of the money to relocate the Caltrain South San Francisco station, we actually had a few questions with the GHG calculations that were made. They seemed to be kind of an outlier, so we had some questions about that. You know, again, both of these projects were very strong, supportive of Plan Bay Area, supportive of our transit and complete streets priorities. Just in terms of the amount of funding that we wanted to recommend and to kind of set priorities for the state, they scored a little lower in terms of meeting our principles than did the other projects. So, you know, again, I think it's worth emphasizing again that our understanding is that the AHSC program, the second round is going to kick off quite soon next year. And again, with the auctions, we expect there's going to be a lot more money on the table. The other thing I wanted to mention about the San Francisco project is that it's our understanding from talking to the project sponsors of the bike project that there actually might be an affordable housing project coming online in that area quite shortly. And I think we would anticipate that that would make that project very strong. And so this might be one of those situations where it might not quite be ready yet, but in a year from now, it might be ready to be even more competitive.
Okay, Commissioner McKenzie, followed by Commissioner Bates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be a poor member of the Board of Directors of SMART if I did not bring up the fact that the project which we proposed, the Smart Rail Car Capacity Project, did not make the cut. One might say relatively modest proposal, but nonetheless one which by adding C cars, which are the middle cars, both of our DMUs, the ones that go forward and the ones that go backward, however you want to describe it. C cars are ones that you stick in the middle that don't have engines on them, but they increase the capacity of the system. And I would gather, if I'm reading between the lines, that there was a disagreement with our greenhouse gas reduction analysis in metric tons. I have briefly glanced, and I will not say that I've analyzed it in depth, but I would like to get some explanation as to why this project did not make the cut, because I think it does give us the potential of reducing the number of vehicles on U.S. 101 as our system starts to operate next year. The actual locomotives are arriving. I know that our executive director even got to honk the horn on one of them the other day. So I'd be interested in hearing why SMART didn't make the cut.
Sure. I think the first thing to mention before we tackle the GHG issue is that we work to prioritize projects. This was based upon the commission direction. To support projects that supported the Core Capacity Challenge Grant Program. So that was the first way that we looked at this. And, of course, we only had four projects, and that didn't necessarily meet what the commission had asked us to do in terms of priorities. Now, however, the GHG issue, we did take a look at that. The GHG calculations are calculated primarily by the project sponsor, and there's a number of different variables that go into those calculations. There are elements like ridership, degree of car ownership in that area, which gives us an idea of the ability to kind of displace car trips through transit, also kind of the length of the car trips. So one thing to mention is that in terms of the ridership number, that SMART examined this a little bit differently than some of the other agencies. And as you mentioned, this project is adding several C cars to the existing train sets. And I guess what we would have expected is to look at the incremental ridership that would have been generated from those, the addition of those cars. Our understanding of what SMART staff did is that they actually included the total capacity, not only the ridership, but the total capacity of the line, and kind of inserted that as the number. So it's sort of a different way of just looking at the GHG calculation, but it struck us as a little bit different than maybe the way the other project sponsors handled that question.
But, Mr. Chair, I might argue back that while you find it a different way of looking at that, did you in fact go back to SMART staff and say, "Hey, we don't see how you're why you're doing it this way? Why can't you do it the way that we suggested you do it?" And then maybe these metrics, I still think that they would stand up well.
We did have a conversation with SMART staff about the metrics. I took a look at them and actually asked a few questions of the staff, and I think maybe some of my colleagues might have had conversations at higher levels with SMART. I'm not right. Sure. But, we certainly had a conversation with them about kind of their reasoning in terms of their evaluation.
And I'm certainly arguing my corner, Mr. Chair, in this matter to see if there would be some way for this particular project to get the blessing of the commission, and I presume this will come back to the commission, and I will argue my corner one more time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Bates.
So I want to go to the affordable housing issue.
Yep.
So as I understand your testimony, there's a cap per city of $15 million, even
right.
though they don't look at the size of the city or like Los Angeles gets $15 million, is that right?
That's right. They're capped at $15 million. So all developers and all.
So then you receive a request for funding, and I'm wondering out of the what percentage of the overall project do you actually put into the cap and trade money goes into the affordable housing? In other words, let's say of 100, let's just say for purpose of discussion, you have a $50 million or say $20 million building.
Yep.
How much money would they be eligible for?
It really depends, and there is actually, when we evaluated these projects, took a look at them, one of the things we looked at was funding leverage. So in attachment B, there's a column there which kind of breaks down the amount of funding that is through cap and trade versus the amount of funding for the total project.
Uh-huh.
And in general, aid, the Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities Program is really gap funding to get these projects delivered. That's really the way that they're looking at them. It is certainly not the majority of funding mm-hmm. for most of the projects. It is a smaller percentage, kind of in roughly the 10 to 20%, sometimes a little bit higher. That's around what we tend to see for these very large affordable housing projects.
So it's roughly between 10 and 20% you can look at, somewhere in that range.
That's a ballpark estimate, and that's certainly something we could refine a little further.
But, because affordable housing, you know, people who do affordable housing have to put together all of these funding sources and tax credits and all these things. And so I'm just wondering how this fits into the overall envelope.
Yeah, and I think SGC, in terms of their administration of this program, has really asked project sponsors to supply a lot of information, full pro formas about these projects in terms of where all the funding comes from. And there's, certainly at SGC, there's a lot of concern in terms of getting these projects on the ground quickly. So they're, looking at funding leverage, really trying to make sure that, all the I's are dotted in terms of getting these projects built.
Uh-huh. And as we heard from the panel that described before us on Wednesday, that it's a major problem getting these projects to go.
It is worth mentioning, Commissioner, if I could, that of Matt's recommended list, three of those projects were kickstarted by TOA, by your Transit-Oriented Affordable Housing Fund. And basically, if we can get the Strategic Growth Council to fill up the tank on the funding, we sort of get paid back and can recirculate that money. So I think the TOA program is one of the reasons why we're so well positioned to capitalize in this first cycle.
So congratulations.
And you also put your finger on the unnamed community that Matt mentioned that was not happy with how things are going, and that's the Los Angeles region. And it's just crazy that they put a funding cap in place that applies to L.A. Just as it applies to any other city in the state. It's just nuts.
Hey, if there are no other comments or questions, we will move to public comment. I have one public comment card for item 4B, Alicia Klein.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Alicia Klein with Resources for Community Development. We're a developer of Riviera Family Apartments, and I have to say affordable housing advocates across the state are just thrilled that affordable housing is being recognized as one of the key tools to reducing greenhouse gas emissions and fighting climate change. And our development, which is recommended, which we really appreciate, is Riviera Family Apartments in Walnut Creek, right downtown next to BART. And this is a chance to reintroduce affordable family housing in the heart of Walnut Creek, walkable and bikeable to transit and jobs and good schools. And the early grant administered by the MTC through the Housing the Workforce subgrant really was instrumental in helping RCD work with the city of Walnut Creek to convince them to approve the deepest parking concessions ever in the city and to develop our transit demand strategies that really reflected how our residents are going to be able to get around without relying on a single owned car. So thank you again to staff for your recommendation. We're really excited to continue our collaboration both at the local, regional, and state level to continue to improve this program to better meet our program goals. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I don't have any other cards. Is there any additional public comment on item 4B? Okay, we'll close public comment. Can I have a motion to forward item 4B to the full commission?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner second. Wirth, second by Commissioner Baker, and we will take that motion without objection. Okay, item number five.
Good morning, Commissioners. Kenneth Folan with MTC staff, and this is item 5A, which is the Tiger 7 regional endorsement recommendations from staff. This is a program that you've seen. This is obviously the seventh version of it that started from the Recovery Act, the ERA program. And the regional recommendations that we've put together are five projects totaling $71 million, which represents about 14% of the total amount available in this program. So nationwide, there is $500 million available. $100 million of that goes or is dedicated for rural projects, so that leaves $400 million for other projects. USDOT says they expect somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 applications, so that gives you roughly a 5% chance of winning in this program here. So, again, our recommendations are in Attachment A, along with the other projects that submitted letters of intent to us. There were 13 applications in total, and they were requesting $250 million. And, again, we're recommending $71 million for the five projects that are listed at the top of Attachment A. We think that based on the coverage of various modes in various areas of the region, that these are the most competitive of the 13, and they, again, they, the evaluation that we did was based on the federal criteria. They have a primary, secondary federal criteria, and again, like last time, there's this ladders of opportunities that is particularly focused on low-income areas and bringing jobs, and housing balance. So with that, I would recommend that you refer this list to the Commission for approval and would see if there's any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions or comments? Commissioner Bates?
A quick question. So are these projects, this is information for you. Are these? Do we require prevailing wage on these projects?
The projects would. It's a federal grant program, so there would be any of the established requirements of the of federal grants. I'm not sure that the actual guidelines for the Tiger mentions that specifically.
Prevailing wage applies to all federal funds, so if they took the money, they'd have to do it.
Okay, any additional questions or comments? Seeing none, we'll move to public comment. I have no public comment cards for item 5A. Is there any public comment? Okay, we'll close public comment. Could I have a motion to forward 5A to the full commission?
So moved.
Moved by Commissioner Tissier and seconded by Commissioner Baker. And can we take that without objection? That will be the order. Okay, item number six, and we'll amend this by adding the word very before brief, I understand. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Nick Rathel, MTC. Very briefly, I just want to say that recognizing the time of the year we're at and the types of items you have on your agenda, doing a training probably isn't going to work in a group setting like this. So my colleague and I, Jess Thomas, are going to try to hit you up individually between now and the end of June. And our first order of business is to make sure you can get into the applications you need to get into and get the data you need so you can see the paperless data for the Granicus system. So we will do that. It'll be very informal. We'll try to find you before or maybe after committee and commission meetings, and then we'll probably put a card out just asking how many people are able to get in and get the data they need. You are going to get paper through the month of June. So you do have the information you need to make the decisions you need to make, of course. And if we need to deal with that timeline, we'll deal with the timeline as well. So wanted to let you know that's how we're going to handle it. Also, there was a small issue this morning that folks weren't able to see in the iLegislate app, the agendas. You should be able to see them now. You just have to refresh the app.
Yep.
Great.
They just came up.
Yeah, they came up right now.
Yep, very good.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you all.
Thank you. Commissioner Tissier.
I just had a quick question. Is there an annotation package that you can add to this? I went into the applications, and you can do it, but it requires a code or a or something to be able to get that, even though it's free.
Okay, we'll look into that. Thank you. So in iLegislate, it was asking for a code?
It's when I went to the application icon, and I was asking for an annotation package.
Okay.
And you can get them for free. The problem is then it asks you for your Apple ID, password, all those things, and it's different than what passwords we have.
Okay, I understand. Okay, we'll get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Worth.
Scott, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had one quick question, and I'm looking at it from the web-based, as opposed to Granicus. But on the printed agendas, it has under action recommended, has committee approval, commission approval, which is really helpful. On the online version, it doesn't have that. That information doesn't seem to appear on the online agenda. So just wanted to make sure we had that information when we completely have to wean ourselves from the paper.
So just to clarify, when you're looking in the online, okay. You're looking at our website, clicking on the agenda, and
right.
The version that comes up?
Right. It's there. You know, it's easy to use. It's got, but it doesn't have on the far right-hand side on the printed agenda, there's a column that says action recommended.
Yeah.
And it goes through each item. So if that could be added, then it'll be.
So we're actually replacing the view that you're looking
great.
At with a view that will have that.
Perfect. Thank you.
Terrific. Any other questions? Okay. We will then move to item number 7, public comment. Is there any public comment? Okay, we'll close public comment, and we're now adjourned until June 10th of 2015 at 9:40 a.m.